This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. Don't expect us to be nice. Don't expect it to be safe. And don't expect us to be politically correct. Nothing is sacred. We find the queer, profane, and cringeworthy wherever we can, here on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It is exactly 10 o'clock. And in the studio today, we have James.
Hey, hey.
We have Patrick, our excellent producer, who is waving enthusiastically. I think he has a bit of a sore throat tonight, so he's going to be a silent team member for the evening. So we have a bit of a national focus on the show tonight. So usually we're quite, I guess, Melbourne-oriented, but our guests tonight, we have one calling in from Hobart and someone else calling in from Perth. So that's going to be pretty exciting. Are you excited, James?
I am very excited. Look at that. International, interstate.
We are international as well.
We've done that in the past.
But tonight, we're just interstate. So we'll be soon talking to Kathy Allen from the University of Melbourne. And we're also going to be talking to Reverend Simon Cuthbert from the Australian Pastafarian Lobby.
And an incredibly good title that Pat was admiring before. I don't know if I'm going to give it a go because I might muck it up. But Steph, how do you pronounce it? Kathy's title.
Well, maybe we should speak to Kathy and she can help us out on this matter. Hello, are you there, Kathy?
Yes, I am.
Hello, thank you so much for joining us tonight. So we've got your title written down, dendrochronologist. Is that correct?
Almost, dendrochronologist.
Dendrochronologist. Is that something that a lot of people aren't as good at pronouncing as you are? So I know that you're at the University of Melbourne and you're currently based in Hobart. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the work that you're doing down there?
Basically it's a bit like being an historian, an environmental historian, and I try to look at history from tree rings. So dendrochronology comes from the Greek for tree, and chronology just relates to time. So we're looking at what the trees can tell us about the past. My particular interest is trying to look at past climate, but other people use it to look at things like geomorphology, so how have rivers changed, past flooding, fire histories and things like that. A lot of my work is based in Tasmania, mainly because Tasmania has a lot of very long-lived trees. We've got four very long-lived species, and the rings in those trees are annual, and they're known to be annual, which is a little bit unusual for Australia. The dominant genus that we have here, Eucalyptus, doesn't usually have annual rings. There are some species in some places that do. And I might talk about one of those a bit later.
And Kathy, for our listeners who don't know, some of these long-lived ones, are they such species such as that the popular Huon pine, or are they a different kind of species?
Huon pine's one of the species that we use a lot. There's also King Billy pine, which is also used a lot for boat building and some musical instruments. There's pencil pine and celery top pine. They're the four main ones that we use. They're the longest-lived trees that we have down here.
So some of the research that you mentioned you were doing was about climate change. So how does temperature affect the rings of trees?
Well, generally, if you go to the right place, usually where temperatures are going to be more limiting, you'll see quite a strong signal, temperature signal in the rings. So, for example, if you go up somewhere high, like Mount Reid, where there's an unusual stand of Huon pine, generally a larger ring will mean that you've had a warmer year. So if the tree's happier, it'll grow more and it likes warmer temperatures. So a very cold summer, you'll only have a very narrow ring in the tree.
And one of the other things that you mentioned was about stream flow reconstructions. What's a stream flow reconstruction?
Basically, what we're trying to do there is that we take the growth of the trees and then we try to look at what stream flow was doing hundreds of years ago. So we're looking at how much water was coming down the rivers, and if you've got a lot of water, then you'll see a particular reaction in the tree. So if it was very wet, again, the trees tend to like a reasonable amount of rain, then you'll get a particular reaction in the tree. And when we're trying to reconstruct the stream flow, we need to look at more than just how wide the rings are. So we're looking at other things in the tree as well. And so we can see, once we do create the record, when we go back several hundred years based on what the tree's telling us, we can see when there were periods when the flow was high and when it was low.
So just to clarify, so you're looking at what's inside the tree to give you information about the water patterns in the past?
Yeah, that's right.
And I suppose it leads in a little bit, because I know that another one of the projects that you're working on is about fire patterns, in particularly in the Australian Alps and I suppose in the Tasmanian highlands. How can this, tree rings help with, the historic fire patterns that have changed over time, I guess?
With the project that we're working on, we're sort of looking at two particular things. So when you look at the tree's age, often you'll have trees that establish after a fire, shortly after a fire. So you can look at different cohorts. So you might have some trees that started growing around 1900, maybe some started in 1940 and so on. And if you look across the landscape at the age of these different groups of trees, you can start to establish a bit of a picture about when they started growing and when there was likely to be a large disturbance. The other thing you can look at is scars in the trees. So trees that don't die after a fire will have a particular scar in them. So some of the trees that have been worked on down here, not by myself but by some colleagues, were the King Billy pine and also the pencil pine, and they found scars in those trees, and they could start to look at when the fires burnt those trees.
I suppose on the show, on It's Nothing Sacred, we also like to talk a little bit about how, your scientific research can be applied in sort of a wider context. We've mentioned or touched on climate change. What are some of the things that you're hoping your research and organize, these projects will uncover or help in the broader scientific sort of sense?
Well, I'll start with the stream flow project. If we can create a record that tells you how wet it was going back hundreds of years, then we can start to look at, was it a lot drier in the past than it is now, or is now just a very dry period? So, and then we can also do some statistics and find out how likely it is that we would have conditions that we have now. So is it very likely or very unlikely? And this is all based on the historic record. So the record that I've got at the moment is telling me that the 20th century generally has been about average conditions or maybe a little bit wetter, whereas if you go back to, say, the early 1700s or late 1600s, there were extended dry periods then. So in other words, things could be a lot worse now. Sorry, things have been a lot worse previously than they are now. And with the fire project or for other dating projects, again, we can look at how things have changed. And if you start to see that things have only changed, for example, when Europeans came to Australia, you might start to infer, well, the Europeans had a major impact on fire use in Australia. So it's putting together clues to try to understand current processes and changes in the context of a much longer record.
Are you able to find out from the trees information about how that changed in terms of how, I guess, Aboriginal peoples would have been managing the fire systems, and then how that shifted when European people came to Australia?
You can probably find out a little bit, but you would also need to look at some other records as well. We can see from the record that we have so far from the Australian Alps, the charcoal record, which is being produced by colleagues of ours at the University of New South Wales, the charcoal record says nothing much really happened or changed until about the 1940s, which is a little bit suspicious. Then if you look at Tasmania, again, this is some other colleagues of mine have done this work, up in the Central Highlands, they've found that the pattern of fires and the intensity of fires didn't really change with the arrival of Europeans until about the 1960s. So you can tell that things have changed and when they change.
That's that's really interesting. I think that's a bit gives us a good idea of the difference between how we might perceive some things and then how things actually were.
Puzzles to solve.
Yes, thank you so much for talking to us tonight, Kathy. That's been really interesting to hear about your research.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. It's a 10:15. This is Nothing Sacred. You're in the studio with Steph, James and Pat.
And we should mention that we were just playing Clean Bandits then, Real Love, one of their newer songs. And I think they were sort of featuring in the trap as well, which was interesting.
With Jess Glynn.
With Jess Glynn, I should mention.
On your Jess.
Thank you, Pat.
So on the line, we have Reverend Simon Cuthbert from the Australian Pastafarian Lobby. Hello, Simon.
Hello. How's everyone over there?
Excellent. So there's three of us in the studio, myself, James and Patrick, and you're calling in from Perth. How is sunny Perth?
Perth is wonderful, actually. I'll be sitting at the back listening to the wildlife and tweet away, so it's wonderful.
Yeah, Perth is pretty nice. It's been a bit rainy here in Melbourne. So you're from the Australian Pastafarian Lobby. Can you tell us a little bit about being Pastafarian and Pastafarianism?
Yeah, of course. Look, Pastafarianism is actually a religion, and yes, it was started in the United States, and it's a belief that the universe was created by the almighty flying spaghetti monster. And this is as told by our prophet, Bobby Henderson, and as written in the Gospel of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. How did this come about? A lot of people and some of your listeners might be asking. It all started with an open letter to the Kansas School Board. Now, over there was a push to teach intelligent design alongside evolution, and the prophet, Bobby Henderson, made a point of that if this was going to happen, that then indeed the Flying Spaghetti Monster must also be taught as it holds just as much, if not more, evidence for being a real and true story of the universe's creation. And from there, Pastafarianism was born. And yes, I mean, we've hit the headlines in recent times. We do have to wear colanders as headwear. Some people think that's slightly ridiculous. But look, it's the same as a lot of religions. We don't ask followers and ministers to wear it all the time. But for official photographs and for identification purposes, yes, absolutely.
Can I ask, so where did the gospel come from? Who wrote the gospel?
That was the prophet Bobby Henderson. He's actually written the gospel.
And you mentioned, so you're a reverend of the church. What kind of process does it take to move that high up in the church?
Well, that's where we differ from a lot of other religions, and really you just need to sign up and get the certificate online.
Wow, that's quite appealing, actually.
Well, it is. And look, there's no exorbitant fee structure or anything like that. It's merely just enough to cover the printing materials and the postage to wherever you may live.
I have to admit, one of the things about being a girl is that I don't like being a miss or a Ms or a Mrs. So if I became reverend, then that would solve that problem forever.
Absolutely, yeah. Sorted.
So why did you decide to become a Pastafarian?
Well, there's a few reasons, and look, everyone's different, but number one, I actually see the same, if not more, evidence for the existence of the spaghetti monster than other gods that are currently worshipped. And look, all these gods are used as bargaining tools to oppress minorities and influence government. And the second reason is because Pastafarianism actually holds some very reasonable and wonderfully humanistic principles, which really resonated with me. And third of all, I love pasta.
I think a lot of us can relate to that.
I think so.
Reverend, I'd love you to talk about these humanistic values in a moment. But first of all, can you delve in a little bit more about the original beginning, the beginning, shall I say, of your faith? Was it? It was relatively recently. For our listeners who don't know, and it would seem, I suppose, quite bizarre. What was this push to teach creationism in state schools in the United States? And we'd sort of hope, I guess, in Australia that would never happen. I suppose, yeah. What your views are on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a push. And look, even in Australia, there are some groups that do believe that creationism, which is obviously the belief the Earth is only 6,000 years old and was created in 6 days, should actually be taught in the national curriculum. And over in Kansas, evolution was taught, and there was a big push by a particular faith over there to get intelligent design, which is a slightly tweaked version of creationism, which basically says that even though, okay, we acknowledge that maybe there is evolution, but we're saying it was intelligently designed by the God of the particular faith. So that was being pushed to be taught alongside evolution, and obviously there are some pretty major issues with that. And as such, Bobby said, well, hang on a minute, if you're going to do that, then really you need to teach the fact that the spaghetti monster created the Earth, and we've got evidence because he's got long appendages, and back in the day when there was less people on the Earth, there were lots of people that were a lot shorter. And as the population has grown and grown and grown, obviously the appendages can't go around as far, and the population has to grow taller.
So
I mean, that's just one part of the evidence.
So when was the Earth created?
Well, we don't know. We don't know. I mean, it's 4.5 billion years old. When the flying spaghetti monster decided to pop it into existence, we don't know.
And are there many Pastafarians in Australia?
Yeah, look, I mean, we've got a Facebook page, and you and your listeners will probably know damn well that Facebook is the source of all truth. And because we've got 800 likes, that must mean that we've got at least that many people to follow us. So, but in reality, look, I think there are lots more. There are some people that don't like to acknowledge it, and look, the flying spaghetti monster's okay with that. We don't push people to advertise the fact that they're Pastafarian at all. So I'd say that there'd have to be, if not billions, maybe a couple of thousand.
So, Reverend, so that can you repeat that you don't like them advertising that they are? Is that right?
We're saying they don't have to go out there and advertise, I'm a Pastafarian, a flying spaghetti monster is it. We don't ask them to go out there and actively do that. If somebody's proud enough to acknowledge that and they want to discuss their faith, then so be it, that's fine. But there's definitely no requirement to do that, no.
So there's not door knocking or encouragement of...
No evangelising.
No proselytising.
Proselytising. I did want to ask a question about the census then, but I suppose you've already partly answered that, because there's been a big push, I suppose, from humanistic organisations and the like to be more for Australians to be more accurate in their selection on the census.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose for you, what would you tell your fellow pastors? Sorry.
Pastafarians,
shall I say. What would you advise them? Because I know that there's quite a large category now of... Steph, help me with... Is it
Jedi Knights?
Jedi Knights, that's right. Gosh.
Yes. Yep.
Jedi Knights and the like. But also a growing group of no religion. What would you honestly think would be best for people to select on the census?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's... You're right. One of the pushes is to get not only Pastafarianism, but I think things like Jedi Knights and that recognised on the census, because, you're correct in saying it's not fair to say, okay, even though Australia is represented by 5,000 buckets, just as a nominal figure, we're going to give you 4 to put yourself within. I mean, that's not only it's just discriminatory. It's not right. It's not allowing people to voice who they truly are. So really... Yeah, it's a very difficult question, because a lot of our followers would just say, well, I don't have a religion, so they'll mark no religion, but that doesn't really give them the opportunity to say, well, even though I've got no religion, I believe in A, B, or C. So it's a difficult one, I acknowledge. Really, it's going to come down to how the individual feels on census night and what options there are available. But I think it's about time that the Australian Bureau of Statistics stood up and actually acknowledged that there are more than a given amount in Australia of chosen faiths and religions.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hello, everyone. You are on Joy 94.9. It's 10:30. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred? And here we have Patrick and James in the studio. And we are talking to Reverend Simon Cuthbert from the Australian Pastafarian Lobby. Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Thank you so much for talking to us. If you do have a question for Simon, don't forget you can SMS 0427-JOY949, email on air at joy.org.au or phone 1300-JOY949. Now, James, I think you may have had a question for Simon.
Yes, I do. Well, Simon, it does have in the name lobby. Now, what you've also mentioned humanism before, or the values of humanism. What is there a link there? Are you pressing for humanistic values, or what? How does that sort of fit into the Pastafarian sort of faith?
Yeah, sure. And look, I mean, it is a lobby, and there are a few. I'll just run through the main priorities at the moment for the lobby.
Please do.
The first one is getting the church recognised in Australia, and that is as a not-for-profit organisation and as an official church. We've also got the political party, which is Party for Pastafarian 0% Tax on Beer. That's the name of the political party. It's getting ministers such as myself recognised and I suppose bestowed the same privileges as other religions, so that we can perform weddings and the like. We're quite happy to perform weddings for anyone that wants to get married. We have no restrictions.
So what's your stance on same-sex marriage in the Pastafarian Church?
There's no issue whatsoever.
Excellent. Woo! We can all get pastor married.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know if you can deal with that.
Patrick in the studio is making the motion of people throwing pieces of pasta as confetti at the wedding.
Yes.
Is that a common occurrence?
You're probably more the spiral pastas. Yeah, spaghetti would be a bit awkward.
Yeah, not spaghetti. Macaroni might work.
It may do.
Well, look, you're on the right channel for good, you know, wedding ideas here at Joy. We've got plenty of time to plan them.
That's right. And it'd be nice if you could just say we don't have much time because we're actually allowed to go out and get married tomorrow, which
exactly.
would be wonderful.
And sorry, I
digress. And look, in my view, yeah, the humanism plays a big part for reasons such as the one we've just discussed. Really, the Flying Spaghetti Monster doesn't discriminate against anyone. We go by the eight. I'd really rather you didn't. And they're some really good principles to go by, I think. And if everybody would pay attention to those and live by them, I think not only would Australia, but the world would be a much better place.
And Reverend, no problems if you don't. But are there many... For our listeners, I suppose, that have heard the word humanism and maybe don't really know much about its history or what it actually means, are there any kind of books or anything that has sort of evolved your thinking on that, or any kind of history that you'd like to share with our listeners about that?
I mean, humanism as such has been... I mean, it's been a bit of a personal journey for me. I was actually raised a born-again Christian, and I was baptised in the church and... obviously born again through what I believed was the Messiah back then. And to be honest, there was a lot of internet reading that went on, and quite often people say the internet is where religion goes to die. We'd say maybe it's where it goes to be born, and such our religion. But, I mean, apart from the stereotypical books, Hitchens, Dawkins, the things that really tend to challenge the reason why we treat people the way we do, and the fact that there really is no reason to do it that way. I mean, there wasn't a particular book on humanism that I read, but more so just stripping back my own personal beliefs to think, well, we're all here. We don't know the purpose that we're here for. So why don't we just treat each other as equals, which is as it should be.
So I guess as someone who was raised as born-again Christian has now changed faiths, you'd have good insight into understanding why people turn to religion. Why do you think religion plays such a big role in people's lives?
Yeah, that's a good one. And it's going to vary from any individual, really. I mean, some people And I had a discussion with a friend of mine last night, and some people are seasonally religious, so they'll go to Christmas Mass or they'll pay attention around Easter. Look, some people need it because they are afraid of what's going to happen when we move on, whether that be a fear of the dark, whether that be a fear of the unknown. And look, some people actually find solstice in faith, and that's okay. I mean, it's okay for people to have a religion, and it's okay for that to be people's safe zone.
So I'm also curious to know, so you mentioned before about part of the attire for being Pastafarian includes wearing a colander on your head, which it sounded like there were some mixed responses to that. What kind of responses do you usually get when people say, when you tell people you're Pastafarian?
It can be one of complete and utter laughter, which is okay. It can be one of anger because people think that we're mocking their particular religion. Which of the thousands, I'm not too sure, but a lot of people think we're mocking it. Some people actually take a lot of interest and say, okay, well, tell me more about this religion, tell me more about this this community, this movement that Pastafarianism represents.
So you were saying you've had some other faiths that have seen it as mocking. What examples do you have? Has it just been on Facebook, or where did you get these comments?
Look, one of them's from a close friend of mine, and it's because the Pastafarian prayer, or the Spaghetti Monster prayer, is remarkably similar to the Lord's Prayer in the way that it's, you know, the phrasing that it uses, and that was taken as the religion mocking Christianity. And I mean, Metallica used the same phrasing in one of their songs, and I don't think they were mocking it either, but it's more so examples like that where people... they get quite hung up over the little things, and they believe that we're taking the piss out of their religion when it's not the case at all. I mean, we're a religion in our own right. We're just trying to get along and be nice and do what we think is right. And as far as I know, there's no copyright on phrasing or lyrics in songs. Not in the religious prayers songs yet.
we do have to go to another break, but if you're again happy to stay on the line, is that all right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
excellent.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. It's 18 minutes to 11, and we are talking to Reverend Simon Cuthbert from the Australian Pastafarian Lobby. Hello, Simon.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you for sticking with us. In the break, I was telling my co-hosts about the email exchanges I had with yourself and some of your other churchgoers, and we noticed that there was quite a distinct pirate theme. Can you tell us a little bit about the relationship between pirates and the Pastafarian Church?
Yeah, so I mean the pirates they do go they're synonymous with the Pastafarian Church, and that's. I mean, colanders are the headdress, and really the official dress, I suppose, is pirate wear and dressing up as pirates. So we celebrate International Talk Like a Pirate Day, and where we can in our email exchange, there is a lot of pirate talk, you're right. So it is synonymous with the legend. And look, there's another part in the gospel, actually, just while I've got the opportunity to mention, is that there is evidence that as the pirates have actually disappeared from the earth, we believe in Pastafarianism that's the cause of global warming. And it may sound ridiculous, but if you look at the evidence, you notice that through time, the number of pirates that sail the seven seas have actually gone down in number. And then as they've gone down in number, global warming's actually increased. So that's in the gospel also.
What about video piracy? You could also argue that climate change is positively correlated with the increase in video piracy.
You could do. That's an interesting concept, actually. Yeah. So maybe in the...
Do I get to be a disciple?
I think you do. Maybe we need to do that by yourself.
Okay. Interesting concepts there, you two. I did also want to ask, perhaps, Simon, you've thought about... where you could go if you are recognised as a proper religion in Australia, Sorry, I shouldn't say proper religion. If you are recognised as an official religion in Australia, in terms of, you were mentioning before about what that would mean in terms of tax status or whether you'd be a charity, but also I'm kind of interested what it would mean in terms of the chaplaincy program.
Well, yes. Now, we believe that the chaplaincy program is discriminatory at best. The way it was funded is obviously found to be unconstitutional, and look, the government's found a way around that. Okay, so be it. But to remove, first of all, to not have qualified counsellors and psychologists in schools, the entire Pastafarian movement thinks is absurd. But not only that, to then rule out the ability for a secular worker who is actually neutral based on faith to go in there and assist young people, we also find quite absurd. And look, if we get in there and we'll challenge that, I believe, and we'll try and get Pastafarian chaplains into schools as well. And look, if that occurs, then I'm sure you're going to get many other religions. We're going to want to have Islamic chaplains. You're going to want to have satanic chaplains. So it really will open the floodgates. So the safest ground, I believe, as a Pastafarian, and this is probably the detriment of myself and the religion, is to have qualified psychologists and counsellors in schools as opposed to chaplains.
Patrick made a motion that I think was satanic chaplains, fuck yeah, I think. is there such a thing? Do you have any alliances with, we mentioned the Jedi religion. Do the Pastafarians and the Jedis work hand in hand, or is it a fairly independent movement?
Yeah, look, I think it's fairly independent. And look, the Satanic Church may have some chaplains. I'm not too sure. I think
there's a real Satanic Church?
Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah, I mean, over in America recently, atheists won the ability to insert their reading material into a school because a Christian church had won that ability as well. And then the Satanic Church said, well, hang on a minute, if you're allowing them and the atheists, then we're going to also, and they won the right to actually put some of their reading material into the schools.
I suppose it's almost it just highlights the slippery slope of it all.
It does. And look, Australia is meant to be a secular nation. And really, secularity is the safest ground, even to help protect religions like Pastafarianism, I think. To have secular systems is the way to protect against that massive inrush and really confusing kids altogether.
That's a very good point, that I suppose secularism has been assumed by religions to be anti them, but it was originally designed as to be, to have no opinion and to protect particularly minorities. Was that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So if anyone's been listening and they think that this sounds like a good idea, a religion where you can have all you can eat pasta and wear a colander on your head and talk like a pirate, how can people find out more about joining the church?
Okay, well, there's a number of ways. You can go to www.apl.org.au, and that's the site for the Australian Pastafarian Lobby. There are numerous Facebook pages set up, I believe, in each state. There's an appendage for the church in each state, and people and your listeners can look those up. Or you can go back to the source, which is venganza, venganza.org, and that'll take you to the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster website in the US.
Are there other churches around the country, or has Australia picked it up with particular enthusiasm?
You mean around the globe?
Around the globe, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there are, yeah. There's Pastafarian churches in the Scandinavian countries, US countries, multiple. It's a multinational church.
That's very interesting. Well, we will put a link up on our Facebook page.
Absolutely. And I must say, Simon, I think I'm almost converted, which is unusual.
Good. I mean, every Friday is a holy day full of pasta and beer, so what more could you want, really?
And I liked that. Yes, no tax on beer, was it?
It was, yeah. That's the,
I think you'll get a lot of fans out of that.
That's right.
Thank you so much for talking to us, especially for such a long time. We really appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much. So it's 11 minutes to 11. You're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. If you have any response to our chat with Simon, feel free to SMS us on 0427-JOY-949, email on air at joy.org.au, phone 1300-JOY-949.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. It is 5 minutes to 11, and we've brought Simon back on the line because we've had an influx of questions from our listeners. So thank you very much for coming back. So we're going to have to whip through these pretty fast because I've only got 5 minutes. The first question was, as a pastafarian, why are you a pastor rather than a reverend? Why are you not a pastor instead of a reverend?
We're going through that discussion at the moment, and we can be called reverend, we're ministers, but we think it's very fitting for the pastafarian religion to have pastors, as in PASPA, to label their religious, the ministers, yeah. Yeah, that's the main reason.
Excellent. And we also had a question from Eddie who asked, what makes pastafarian a religion rather than a cult?
That's the same question you could ask of any religion, I guess. We worship a being. We believe that this thing created the universe. We believe it's all for good. We don't force people to follow anything. We don't order them to have any sort of doctrinal belief. Realistically, if you want to be a pastafarian but not believe in the flying spaghetti monster, that's fine. If you don't want to worship the leadership of the group, that's fine also. So that's probably the main difference, is that there really is, even though you're part of a religion, there is that freedom of choice.
Definitely not a cult there by the sound of it.
No.
We
also have a message from Chris who was concerned about the decline in the number of true pirates in the world. And Chris says that there are internet pirates bootlegging music and movies, but overwhelmingly they do not garb themselves in the regalia dated by such a noble man. So Chris is obviously quite concerned about this.
Sorry, this is just wanted to jump in there. So that's actually from the Gospel, according to the Flying Spaghetti Monster, which was written by the prophet Bobby Henderson. Sorry, just jump in there for that one.
Oh,
again, sorry.
That was actually done from prophet Bobby Henderson for
it
that
is,
one.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and look, I mean, it is a concern that the true pirates that do get around in the pirate get-up and regalia are declining. Unfortunately, internet pirates don't seem to be having any sort of positive impact. So even though we appreciate people trying to reduce global warming through internet piracy, it's probably not a great idea.
And I guess the final comment was a more serious one. When we were talking before about the census, and Chris also says, I'm drawn on the census thing. By selecting no religion, it gives greater reason for political parties to think about atheists. But why you put Jedi... Oh, sorry. It must be when you put Jedi is counted and not understood. It appears as Australia is more religious than usual, and people like Tony Abbott will start to use this to their advantage. What's your response to that?
Yeah, and look, that's part of the reason why we're lobbying to get, fairness in the census. Really, I mean, it's true when you're forced into marking something that is not representative of yourself and it's not representative of who you are. You're right, it ends up in the bucket that you don't want it to end up in. And if you leave it or you write something on there, then, yeah, it's classed as null and void, and they can do that. I mean, Tony Abbott is, he's a trained Catholic priest. I don't know if everybody knew that. So he may have an agenda, he may not. That's for individuals to decide. But in any case, fairness and non-discriminatory census data is what Australia needs.
And I suppose that by extension that would mean that the push that was on was in that question was to say, do you have a faith, yes or no? And then obviously going on to choose and find your faith if that is the answer.
Yeah, that's right. And look, we've got a lot of atheists, a lot of people who identify as atheists within the pastafarian church, and that's okay also. And you're right, by choosing no religion, then you're sort of saying, okay, well, the irreligious part of Australia is growing wider and wider. when realistically, of that, what it is, 33 or 38%, I'm not too sure at the moment, but of that percentage, there could be 15% that are actually Jedis or past Aetherians, you're right.
Yeah, that's certainly given us lots to think about. We're going to have to wrap up because it's exactly 11 o'clock. Thanks again, Simon. Good night, pleasure. Everyone. Go forth and pesto, or whatever the past Aetherians might say, and have a great night. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.